Well, James, this has taken some time to get off the ground, hasn't it? So welcome to the podcast.
About a year ago, we maybe discussed doing this, but yeah.
We did, yeah. In fact, I brought all my podcast stuff over to Turkey with me to get it done over there, and we never got a chance to do it. However, we're here.
Here we are.
Here we are. Now, just so everyone is aware, where actually are we?
We are in Exeter. So, well, just outside Exeter, nearer Columpton. My golf 1.0, shall we say.
Yeah. And this is a new concept, and I'm not going to dive into too much into that, but you've kind of got yourself involved with them a little bit, as in doing a bit of coaching here, and just tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, so a bit of an ambassador role, but basically it's a new company that's set up about a year ago, indoor golf simulators, trying to get new people into golf, sort of a lot of different ideas, coaching aspects, but also it's a 24-hour facility. So people can join as a member, but they've got access to, 24-hour golf facilities, especially during the winter when the weather's not as good, somewhere nice indoor to practice with good facilities and simulators to give you feedback on your game.
And I think, from what I gather, these are going to be starting to pop up across certainly the southwest of England and then moving further afield from that. Is that?
Yeah, building one in Wellington. That should be open in the next sort of 5 to 6 weeks.
Right,
that'll
okay.
be four sort of luxury bays, bar downstairs.
Yeah.
So, a lot going on.
So which actually gives coaches like yourself an opportunity to come in here, do a session, and then shut the doors down.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can coach to whatever time in the evening you want.
Yeah.
Kind of plan your diary how and when. And it's also giving people experience as well. So if you're there on hand to make sure everything's okay, because it can be quite daunting for new golfers to go into a facility when they don't know how the
absolutely.
Technical stuff works. So, yeah, if you're there on hand to give them a pointer, then it just creates experience.
It's just like, I mean, I'm thinking about like my experience with gyms. Like, not that I'm a big gym goer, but I was a member of a 24/7 gym, had a fob. Zapped myself in. There was no one there other than the gym was just open. And then I was free to use whatever I wanted to use in the gym. And then when I was finished, I just went out the front door and it locked.
Yeah.
That's kind of where we're at, isn't it?
Yeah, certainly with this one. Maybe a bit different in the sort of new one at Wellington, because that's going to be, maybe won't be 24 hours, but that will be manned because it's going to be a busier place with people coming through. So there'll always be somebody on hand to give you advice if you need any help.
How golf has changed since like you and I started playing golf, I would say similar sort of time.
Yeah.
Just shifted massively, isn't it?
Just even golf coaching, how that's evolved in terms of, you look at Skillist now with online coaching, my coach Alex Clapp can coach anybody all over the world kind of at any time. It's crazy.
I think it's the importance as well of creating now social media platforms to help drive opportunities with online coaching, isn't it?
Absolutely.
You know, I think about even the audience that I have with the channel, you know, the amount of people that do knock on the door going, come on, Dan, are you going to do a lesson online? Can I have a lesson over in America or wherever? And time is always a factor for me, but the opportunities are there for coaches, aren't there? To like you said, to coach anywhere.
Yeah, I haven't done a lot on Skillist, but a guy from your channel called Graham lives in the Netherlands. He messaged me a few weeks back and we've done our first lesson on Skillist.
Brilliant.
So he's sending me videos of himself on the range in the Netherlands, and then I'm sort of giving him a bit of a plan, breakdown of his swing, etc., and then giving him something to work on. He's working with somebody he considers that he knows through watching you on the channel, so he's built up a bit of a rapport. So then, you know, you're not coaching, having a lesson with somebody random that you don't have any kind of contact with.
That's so good, isn't it?
Yeah.
I love that. And I'm so glad that Graham has reached out to you and is doing something with it. It's fantastic to see. Take me back though, James. Take me back to your youth.
Yeah.
Why golf? Where did golf come from for you?
Family, really. My mum and dad spent a lot of time up at Tavistock Golf Club. So from the age of four, I was up there putting. Yeah, I had a sawn-off putter and literally just putted for hours.
Dad? Mum? Who?
Both, yeah. My dad was a good player. He was playing for the county. My mum played for the county.
Yeah.
You know, my dad was quite busy with work and playing, so I started off a lot chipping with my mum after school. And then as I grew older, got my first set of clubs at the age of seven, a set of Bernard Langer clubs. Yeah, they were hid behind the curtain in the living room on Christmas Day.
And
I don't think I've ever been that excited. So I went and played a few holes at Tavistock. But then as I got older, used to sort of follow my dad around playing for the county, and then started to play a few national events, and mum and dad used to take me everywhere.
Tavi, I think about Tavistock Golf Club. Tavi, I kind of see it as, in some ways, a little bit similar to what we had at Torquay, where it's got the golf course, but you've got the bar there. It's right on the edge of the town.
Yeah.
It feels to me like it's got that whole bring people start almost like drinking up there and then they carry on down into the town. It's kind of got that pubby kind of feel with the golf course, which is just like what Torquay was like. Is it, 'cause I just feel like Tavi, you've embraced Tavi and Tavi's embraced you. I mean, you're probably an honorary member, I would think, with all the stuff that you've done in golf. I don't know if that's the case.
Yeah, no, I'm an honorary member.
But you are very much part of the furniture up there. Is that, would you say that that's
whole,
part
whole
of your life?
The whole family is. You know, me and my wife take Jacob up there now, and, you know, he uses his plastic clubs on the putting green and goes around the putting green on his bike. So it's such a family-friendly environment.
Yeah.
You know, I used to get dropped up there as a 12, 13-year-old kid, and I'd play 36 holes, four or five games of snooker. You know, I'd spend all day up there, and they were so good. You know, some clubs you couldn't imagine leaving a 12, 13-year-old up there all day by himself, kind of.
No.
It's always been a friendly members club. And like you say, you know, we go up there for drinks of a Saturday afternoon, early evening, and it is more of a social club as well as a
golf
members
club.
Golf club, yeah.
Yeah. No, I find it fascinating. And I'm so glad that those clubs are still going, because that culture is kind of, I feel, is slightly shifting in golf.
Yeah.
You know, these resorts that we go to and we film at and things like that, and they're lovely and they're great for 2 day breaks and things like that. But to still have that social side of it, I think, is a massive part of golf.
Yeah, absolutely.
And certainly what we grew up with, I just feel like we're losing it a little bit, and maybe pubs in general we're losing it, but certainly Tavi still feels like it's got that.
Yeah, and you see the same people up there all the time, you know, the regular sort of members.
Yeah.
You know, somewhere like St Melian, just fantastic venue, great golf course, everything about it, but just doesn't have that members feel. You kind of almost get a little bit lost with the golf breaks and the different things, and you can't imagine having the same setup there that you would at Torquay or Tavistock, being able to take your family there.
Yeah. And what about Tavi then? Do you feel when you go up there, how does it make you feel to go in the front door of that golf club?
Just feel like you're at home, basically. So, you know, being able to take Jacob up there and everybody embraces it, you know, some places you might go, oh, there's a child running around or what have you, but, you know, he's fairly well behaved, but it's nice to, he's an enclosed area and you can kind of sit and have a drink and not worry too much about what he's getting up to. You can't do that if you go to a pub or somewhere like that. You know, you've got to be eyes sort of on them all the time.
Do you feel like you've had the support from a place like Tavi? Does it feel like it's been a massive support mechanism for you as not just a golfer but as an individual as well?
Certainly over the years things change when personnel changes.
Yeah, of course.
So, you know, the last few years maybe not quite so much, but
the membership as a whole, you know.
Yeah, I've got a lot of friends up there. You know, I'm friendly with the captain and various other members at the moment. So, yeah, I've always had a lot of people I can lean on up there for advice or friendly.
And you talk about your development as a golfer, and we'll follow your journey up to this point, certainly. But, you know, playing for Tavi, then achieving all the things that you kind of achieved at Tavistock, and then moving into the county element and following your dad's footsteps, but also like looking to try and take over those, get beyond his where he got to within the game of golf. How much of a driving force was your mum and dad within what you did with your golf?
Massive, really. I couldn't have done half the things I did without their support in terms of financially, but also the amount of driving they did. You know, my mum drove me around the country. I remember once, she drove up to Royal St George's and back in a day, and following day
brutal.
I was in the Forest of Arden and then back to Royal St George's. So, you know, she spent our whole summers, basically gave them up to travel me around, and I certainly wouldn't have been the golfer I was today without, you know, their support. And, you know, they're still very supportive now. They came out to the PGA Cup last week and watched me. And tour school last year, they came out to final stage. So,
Brilliant,
they're still very much a supportive element.
And I know your mum is and continues to be a massive support of you, you said about you driving around and doing all those things. And she was a very good golfer in her own right, wasn't she?
Yeah.
Got down to a pretty low handicap.
Yeah, she was single figures.
Single figures, played a bit of county stuff through her years of playing. And then your dad and his brother was a pro as well.
Yeah.
So Martin was a pro. But your dad was, if I think back and I think about like Your dad never gave you any wriggle room, did he? When it came to the like when you were working your way up through the county type of thing, and he continues to be a big supporter of the county golf and development of people coming up through the ranks. Certainly was for myself and my brother and a few others that were around us at the time. Take me back to that county championship, that county fight. So, Churston,
yeah.
County fight, was it? So it was the amateur championship, Devon Amateur Championship at Churston. You and your dad got into the final.
No, it was semi-final. So
was it?
I'd won the gold medal. And
which the gold medal's the qualifier, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I sort of cruised through the match plays.
Yeah.
And I think I was four up after 10.
Yeah.
The 11th down the hill, I've sort of duck hooked it onto the ninth fairway.
Right.
And he makes a comment that, you know, there should have been an internal out of bounds down there and
right.
all this about me being lucky. And then we get onto the green and he's got sort of similar line to me. And
yeah.
hits left to righter and he's got a caddy and it misses and he's saying how much it had broken at the hole. So I took notice of that and ended up overreading my putt then. So then I, 15 years old, I kind of lost my head. I felt like he was using gamesmanship and called him a cheat. And
oh, really?
Yeah.
Got heated?
Oh, yes, yeah. I completely... He did what he needed to do.
And he got through. So he beat you in that, didn't
he? On the late... he beat me down the 19th in the end.
Oh,
but,
wow.
I totally lost my head.
Did you have him for a period of time? Were you up on him?
Four up.
You were four up?
Yeah. Four up at that stage. And, he used a bit of dark arts, as they say. And, I wasn't mentally strong enough to cope with it at that time, so...
He's dined off that story for ever since.
Yeah, I'm sure he has. But yeah, like I say, he was always that case of you need to learn the hard way. Nothing was ever given to you. So,
How does that work for someone like you then coming through from there? Like, would you look back at that and think, oh, that was a bit negative at the time and probably caused a few issues at the dinner table? But do you think that helped you?
Yeah, I'd say sort of. Mentally, I'm pretty strong.
Solid.
So, you know, if I get in contention for a tournament, might play poorly down the stretch, but I'm certainly not going to lose it through feeling pressure or anything like that where I get out of my comfort zone. You know, I've been in many situations. Growing up at Tavistock was a great environment because it was always like that. You know,
yeah.
I was hung off a coat hanger in the changing room at the age of 12 and my mum had to come and rescue me. So,
is that right?
Yeah. You know, I used to be winding people up and, you know, a lot of sort of fun and games back then. So... Yeah.
So did you actually go on to win the Devon Amateur after that?
No, I think that one scarred me for life. In fairness, I didn't really play in it that many times afterwards because it either clashed with the Brabazon Trophy or I was away.
Yeah.
So, I think I turned pro maybe 5 or 6 years after that.
And talking about your journey then, so obviously you played for the county, which was an important part of... do you know what? I'm just thinking back now. I remember being at Tiverton one year. We were playing in the junior, because you were obviously a few years younger than me.
Yeah.
We were playing in the, I want to say it was maybe even like the Tiverton Junior Open or even it was a Devon.
Devon Under 18s it was.
Was it Devon Under 18s?
I remember it because I remember that day like it was yesterday. I don't remember anything, but I do remember that day.
What did you win that? Did you win something that day? Or did you just feature? Or did you just
first of all,
featured?
I got a lift up with your wife's dad.
Oh,
so
is that right?
Yeah, got a lift up with Laura and her dad,
really?
Carl. Yeah, so got a lift up. I was 12.
I was going to say, you were
and
young.
I think I had 19 putts, and I finished second.
Is that right?
In the whole event. I think I couldn't reach many of the par fours and two, and I chipped and putted everything. I think I played with Kevin Harper, and he was just making comments all day about how ridiculous.
But who won it?
I want to say it was possibly Kevin Harper.
Because I got a funny feeling.
I shot 72.
You shot 72?
Yeah.
That's right. You definitely shot 72. But I think I did okay that day, and I might have finished third or fourth or something like that. And I think you're right. I think Kev did win it.
Yeah.
Because I think it was the junior championship.
Because I called up my dad from a payphone, because I didn't have a mobile. And
right,
told him I shot 72, and he wouldn't believe me. He actually hung up, because he just wouldn't believe that I'd shot 72. But I was like, no, I've shot 72. But he wouldn't believe me, so...
Yeah. But I mean, like county golf, obviously it was an important part. It was important for me personally. Did you find it like that as well? Did you enjoy your county times? Did you?
Yeah, I absolutely loved it. I loved team golf.
Yeah.
Just the element of spending time with people you like and just good fun, the sort of banter. And yeah, absolutely loved the county side of it.
Yeah. And then it moves in. I remember you winning Southwest Week's stroke play.
Yeah, that was at Minch in Hampton.
Was that Minch?
Yeah. 2006,
yeah,
something like that, yeah.
And then, from county, then you go on, and then you start playing for England and doing all the England side of things. enjoy that?
Yeah, I loved it. I learned a lot. Sometimes, like I say, you can get overcoached to certain degrees. So I had my coach at Tavistock, Dominic, who was fantastic. Then you had a Southwest coach. Then you had a national coach. So if those coaches are working together, then it's great. And I think nowadays they probably are.
Yeah, very different back then.
Yeah, certainly. I was a fantastic putter growing up, but I used to aim right and pull everything. That was just my tendency. But of course, when I went to England coaching, it was like, well, that doesn't look right. We need to change that. And, you know, I went through some difficult times with my putting, certainly for a few years.
Yeah.
It's something I'm addressing now at the moment. But yeah, it's something you've got to be very careful with coaching. You've got to make it consistent and maybe have the coaches that you're working with talking.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then, like, talking about England golf, I mean, you got into England golf quite young, I remember.
Yeah, I was 14, I think, when I started representing England in the under 16 format.
Yeah.
And then I think it was on the way up to Formby that I was going towards my first A squad session. Got quite a funny story on that, actually, but which I had a chat with Graham Walker last week, one of the England coaches.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was actually sick at the first training session because we'd won the county championships at Formby.
Oh, yeah.
And I was going to Sheffield the following day. So we went out in Southport, got quite drunk with your brother and others. And then
how old were you?
I was, what, 18? Oh, 17, so just, 18.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, then went down to Sheffield, Hallam University, and didn't realise, but it was a VO2 max test. Ross Fisher was in front of me, absolutely pounding the treadmill. He was such a fit guy. And then, hungover, I got on for my warm-up and was unfortunately sick after about 2 minutes. And then I'd come clean that I was drunk the night before. They were pretty good, to be fair, but it was one of those
It was their English county finals. They had to be at least give a little bit of leeway there, didn't they?
Yeah, I wasn't aware that I was going for a VO2 max test the following day. Otherwise, I maybe wouldn't have had so many drinks.
Tell us some players then. Who would have been in your kind of the England under 18s or elite or what?
So Ross Fisher, guy called James Heath, fantastic golfer,
good player,
won the Lytham by a country mile 1 year.
Yeah.
Gary Wolstenholme, Sam Osborne, one of the most impressive players.
Remember him,
I think he's out in the States now, but I remember my first session. We went around the Bracken course and he shot 9 under.
At Woodall Spa.
Woodall Spa, but he was hitting, I think it was fades on odds and draws on evens. Like,
that was part of the training? Or
no,
was
that was
what
he just decided to do that day because he's, his mind was working overdrive, should we say. You know, he was a bit of a golf nutter, but he would just, he had the ability to do that. And, you know, at that age, I was just aiming up straight and kind of hoping for the best. I was a good player, but I remember that first practice session thinking, wow, I'm out of my depth here.
Really?
Yeah, just watching Ross Fisher hit balls. So impressive. I got more comfortable as it went on, but I certainly remember feeling a little bit, out of my depth that first session.
I remember Paul Waring was part of your setup as well, wasn't
it? Yeah, me and Paul spent a lot of time together. Certainly England youth setups, and we went to Japan together and England European Championships and, various events, yeah.
Who would you say at that time, who would you say, not necessarily the most impressive because you obviously said a few there, but do you ever come up against anybody that you just thought, and have actually gone on to bigger and better things, let's say? Is there anyone that jumps out to you? Ollie Fisher?
Yeah, he was incredible. So I played with Ollie Fisher and McIlroy at the same age.
Yeah.
Both 16. And Ollie Fisher was unbelievable. Okay. I caddied for him. I got rested / dropped in the afternoon singles of the European Youth Championship. I think it was at San Roque against Scotland. And him and Lloyd Saltman, they were both 6 under, halved. And then Ollie won, I think it was on the 20th. But I remember him talking me through the shots he was going to hit, and it was going to be a 2 yard fade off that tree, 5 yard draw off that tree, but he could hit shots to order. And he was telling me that he'd learned so much off Faldo about shot shaping. But at that age, I'd never seen anybody with that much control of their golf ball, but also the intent, you know, what he was trying to do, and the way he thought on the golf course. And, you know, I thought he was going to become one of the best players in the world, which, you know, he became a great player, but then, you know, I think as time went by, maybe was overcoached, and, you know, see the difference between him and McIlroy. You know, at that age, there really wasn't, you know, people were talking that, you know, those two were going to go up through the ranks and get to the top of the game. He was uber impressive.
But what, obviously, Ollie Fisher went on to do what he's done, and McIlroy's gone on to do what he's done. Did you see anything in that at that time that maybe, because Ollie, even though he did go on to, you know, he's played some high-level golf, winning on the DP World Tour, European Tour, shooting 59 at the Victoria course out in Villamora. Did you see anything there that was like, why didn't, I want to say didn't make it, but ultimately never played Ryder Cup or anything like that? Why do you think he didn't make it on there?
Because it comes down to talent. They both had a similar level of talent, in my opinion. But then it comes down to coaching, you know.
Loads of things, really.
Work ethic or fiddling. Because it's so easy to go down a wrong path. You look at Martin Keimer, different players like that. And if you haven't got good advice behind you or somebody watching over you, making sure you don't make those mistakes. McIlroy, a few years ago, when Bryson was starting to hit it miles, he even admitted himself he went chasing distance. Luckily for him, it only lasted 3 months. But his driving really went off. So any decision you make in terms of change, you've got to be so careful and make sure you're making the right decision. Otherwise, you can really ruin your game, and it's so difficult to get it back.
And if I think about it, and I don't know much about Ollie Fisher's situation, but you know, McIlroy had a coach that he stuck with the whole time.
I think he's seen different personnel maybe once or twice, but. Yeah. You look at Manassero, he's another prime example. Yeah. He's just come back to play fantastic at the PGA last week.
Yeah.
But he's another one who went chasing distance, went away from his coach and completely lost his game.
Yeah.
You know, got the yips in various elements. And so it just shows that, you know, not many stick it out for the longevity of a McIlroy, because it is so difficult to be disciplined with what
you're
doing.
Keep going. Just keep going like that, yeah. And what do you think was the best event you ever played in as an amateur? What would you, if you, could you pick one?
I always used to love the Lytham Trophy.
Okay.
That place was special.
Yeah,
I used to look forward to the Lytham Trophy every year. Yeah. The Brabazon was good, but it moved around golf courses. That and the St Andrews Links. St Andrews is a special place. St Andrews Links and Lytham
and
Trophy.
Yeah. England golf, do you think it's in a good place now? Do you think it was in a good place back then?
It was brilliant. Maybe I didn't take advantage of it as much as, you know, I'm not the type of personality to sort of delve into necessarily the nutrition side and things like that. But certainly, it was fantastic. You had every single thing there at your disposal, whether you had a mind coach or long game, short game, everything. So, you know, they set you up to basically for tour life.
And going on to tour life, obviously then, you know, you're now James Ruth, England player, achieved some very good things within amateur golf, high-level golf, played with some of the best players in the world at that particular time. You then look to progress your career on and move into the professional game. Give me the first couple of years, let's say, of becoming a pro. How did the transition feel?
Yeah.
What did you achieve with the golf from that point?
I sort of started off turned pro. I had a discussion with the management company. I didn't know too much about, but basically gained some sponsorship for my first year.
Yeah.
Decided to go out and play on the EPD Tour in Europe.
In Germany.
Rather than Euro Pro. Because the finances were there, it just seemed better to get used to the travelling, the flying, if you were going to start to play Challenge Tour and European Tour. I remember going out to Spain. So they had a sort of winter series.
Okay.
Missed the cut the first week and then had a win the second week. It was a big shock at the time.
That's a massive, like, don't make the cut, win.
Yeah.
There's a lot in between that, isn't there?
Yeah, and, it was one of those where Hugh Slewerton was one of the best amateurs in the world, I think, and then he had turned pro. So I was in the final group with him on the last day and I went out in 30. 6 under.
He's an arrow, isn't he?
Yeah, just like 150 in. It's like throwing darts.
Is it?
It literally is. And he's a nice lad as well. I remember him chasing me down on the back nine, and I was literally hanging on by a thread come the end. Yeah, just I think a bit of nerves, and just I'd never led a professional golf tournament before, so you know my short game certainly rescued me come the end, and I won by one.
And was he already a pro for a period of time?
He had been for maybe a year or so.
Okay, so he's got a little bit of experience behind him and things like that. And then that EPD then, that allowed you, because I remember following you on that, your progress on it, and that allowed you, again, like you talked about, travel.
Yeah.
Allowed you to bounce around Europe a little bit?
Yeah, so there was quite a few events in like the Czech Republic, Hungary, yeah. And for me, there was no sort of sat nav on your phone back then. There was no TomTom. So, you know, I was printing off a sheet of AA route planner, flying into Munich, and then
off you go.
Driving half an hour, getting to these towns at 11:30 at night, trying to stop a random German to ask them directions to the hotel. So it was a learning experience. I grew up pretty quickly. You know, I didn't drive until I was 21. So, you know, mum and dad used to take me everywhere, and, you know, most things were sorted in terms of hotel, and suddenly you had to start thinking for yourself pretty quick. And yeah, certainly grew up very quickly that year.
Did you win that year?
Not that year, no. I finished sixth by, I actually checked, weirdly enough, last night. I don't know why, because I've always said 59 euros, but it was 49 euros I missed the challenge tour by that year.
Oh, wow, so top five from
the
EPD. Top five,
and I finished sixth by 49 euros, yeah. I had a couple of events towards the end of the season where I was struggling with tendonitis, that I either withdrew or didn't finish.
Okay.
And that was a tough one. And then the start of the following year was really tough.
What does that even feel like to not get a huge progression within the game? So it's like 49, I could give you 49 euros to get onto that tour.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like, how does that make you feel? Because the step from EPD to Challenge Tour, people don't know what EPD is. They know what Challenge Tour is.
Yeah.
That step is big. Probably from the level of golf that's being played is probably not massive, but there's probably more of them.
More traveling, more different traveling. Country every week.
Yeah.
it's completely different.
But what does that make you feel like? Can you think back to what did it make you feel like to not get it, that step forward for the sake of 49 euros?
Yeah, it was devastating because I'd never had an injury before as well. So that was really playing on my mind because I couldn't sort of understand how all this had happened, where it had come from. I'd never been injured, so that was a tricky one because all I want to do is play golf. So it was almost like I needed a week off but couldn't really afford to take a week off in terms of the points race. And then to miss it by that much was just devastating because I'd been in the top five kind of most of the year. I'd had an early win, I had another win, so I was kind of in that top five. But those last six events where I was struggling a bit with the elbow, just the form kind of went off. And it was, you know, almost the thought of having to go back through that
process
year again.
Yeah.
And
because did it feel like you were starting from scratch again?
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, the start of the next year, I felt like I'd worked hard over the winter and just wasn't getting the results, you know, shooting up, just inconsistency. And I remember my dad actually saying to somebody that my game had gone. And that really, really irritated me.
It probably pushed you.
Well, I ended up going win, second win. But I felt like I was working hard, doing all the right things, but for whatever reason, the results just weren't. But I felt like they were going to come. But again, it was just maybe a little bit of a hangover of the following year. That frustration maybe led into the next year. I don't know. But the second half of the season was incredible, really. Some of the best golf I've played for a long stretch, and I won that tour again.
So you actually, the year later, you went from sixth first year.
Yeah.
And the year after, you won the tour.
Yeah, I think
so you won the Order of Merit.
Three wins in five events, and I remember just feeling like I couldn't do anything wrong.
Yeah. Do you think the year before gave you that little bit of experience that helped you? Not just from a travel point of view, were you seeing golf courses for the second time?
Correct.
Then?
Yeah. I was playing on golf courses that I'd played before.
Yeah.
So, you know, you start to learn a pattern of shots and greens and stuff like that and getting used to the traveling. So, yeah, it definitely helped.
Who were you traveling with?
I was traveling with an American called Patrick Horseman, who had ADHD. He was an entertaining character. And two Irish guys, Mark Campbell and can't remember the name of the other guy. But, yeah, there was four of us that used to sort of either get Airbnbs, that wasn't then, but, you know, houses and different things, and we used to travel from week to week. Lee Caulfield as well.
Yeah, Lee from Burnham.
And a guy called Jay Taylor, he was called,
Okay. There was another lad, Jackson or something?
Yeah, Grant Jackson.
Former
rugby league player from Castleford, Way Hull, yeah.
Right, okay.
He was a fantastic lad, and his philosophy was work hard and play hard. So, you know, he would work seriously hard, but then also, you know, we'd have a night out at the end of the four rounds, and, yeah, some fantastic places to go out, you know, in the Czech Republic and Hungary, and it was an amazing experience,
And just so people are aware, because there's a lot of people out there that love to look behind the curtain, and this is what these podcasts are all about, but you know, when you've played four rounds of golf in a tournament, five or six rounds, taking in practice rounds and pro-ams and things like that that go along with it, is there a party on the Sunday? Is that a thing? Does that happen? Is there an end of event party going on for the winner that everybody else kind of gets involved with?
Yeah, I think there is on main tour. There are certain parties that go on during the week that are put on for the players and various guests.
So there's
guests.
Like a cut party.
Yeah.
And then there's a Friday party and a Sunday party.
Yeah. certainly, I remember going to Sweden one year with my mum and... Yeah, I won't say where the party was, but yeah, certainly for the players that missed the cut, they could have had an entertaining evening. But
just to drown the sorrows.
Yeah. With the EPD, there wasn't like a scheduled after party, but you know, we used to go out and have a good night out in whatever town we were in.
And it does happen to a point. And when you've not made the cut, how does that make you? Do you kind of like try and assess it a little bit more, or do you just want to go, do you know what, I just want to get this week over and done with and move on to next week? And how does
I think your sort of schedule changes over time or evolves over time, should we say. So certainly when I first started playing Challenge Tour, a missed cut would basically make me grind even harder, try and change things, and it did not help. You know, I used to treat it as a 9-to-5 job, probably over practice, fiddle too much, and then that just led to a little bit of trust issues, and you know, I was finding I was playing okay in practice, but then all those sort of fiddling abouts and things on the range would then lead into loose shots on the golf course. Yeah. So I'd play 15 holes okay and chuck in a couple of doubles or whatever, just because the trust element wasn't there.
So you've got to be
very careful again with practicing and structuring. Like, my sort of planning of practice now is completely different to what it was when I was in my early 20s.
Right, okay. And then winning the EPD.
Yeah.
Going into Challenge Tour.
Yep.
So now you've got your card, you're off and running, you've got X amount of events to play in for the year.
Yeah.
Did you go tour? Are you going to tour school in this whole time?
Yeah, I went to tour school. So basically with the top five of like the EPD or the satellite tours, if you're in the top five and you go on to better your category, the player further down goes up the list.
Ah, right. So if you go off to tour school and get a better category at tour school, that next person takes your category.
Yeah.
Right.
So that that year, I had, I think, three opportunities of Will Besling, a couple other guys going to second stage. If they get through second stage or make the cut at final stage, then it basically bumps me up to the Challenge Tour. So I was watching tour school again. Oh, that was another gut-wrenching moment because none of them got through and improved their category. So
that's annoying.
Yeah, so I was following that tour school, refreshing every five minutes.
But carried from.
Yeah. Or just got out and put some other players
another
element to it. Yeah.
So how did your first year on Challenge Tour, how do you feel like that went? What year are we now?
We would have been 2009. It was horrific, if I'm honest. I went out to Colombia and before my first...
Colombia? Were you out in Colombia? They got Challenge Tour in Colombia?
They did, yeah.
South America?
Yeah.
Wow.
On the range and tendonitis, bang, in the elbow. Yeah.
So same injury?
Same injury. So that really plagued the first half of my year. I had steroid injections, I think two of, but just had no confidence of hitting a ball off the floor.
Oh, right, okay.
And then I think it was, where were we? Switzerland. I think my mum had come out to caddy and saw an osteopath called Pora Singh, and he was with the Challenge Tour. They have an osteopath all week, every week, and he gave me one of the most painful experiences in my life. He basically went through my tricep, massage and forearm, and I've never had a problem with tendonitis since.
Wow.
Yeah, it was incredible.
One innings?
One physio session with him, and it was brutal.
Yeah.
Like, I've never, you know, wanted to scream, but he basically just said, you're so tight in your triceps and what have you. So he went through my tricep, put some kinesio tape on, and I've never had an issue with tendonitis.
Because I had it in my wrist, badly in my right wrist, and to the point where I remember booking in for, I don't know what it's called now, like a thudding session on your hat, like they what's it called, they thump something into your shock therapy is what it's called, and I basically couldn't drive with the right, I couldn't put my hand on the steering wheel to drive the car down there. I had the shockwave therapy into my wrist, which was so painful, like so painful. And then I could drive home. But I've never had it, I've had probably three sessions in it, so it did come back.
Yeah.
But it ran all the way up to my shoulder, all the way down. And, but I've never had an issue with that ever since. Shockwave therapy. So it sounds like it's the same push pressure.
Injuries are a difficult one because you've got the area that's affected, but it can stem from other places. So if you release those other places, that injury gets better.
But most
people think, I need to treat that area, but that's not where it's necessarily stemming from.
Yeah.
So over the, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, I started to have a problem with my wrist.
Yeah.
And any time I had ultrasound therapy, the wrist would improve,
right.
But it would get really stiff and tight. So I basically bought myself a ultrasound machine. It was about £200 from Boots, I think. And I used that a couple of times and the wrist injury has completely disappeared.
Wow.
It was something to do with the carpal tunnel. And your brother actually started to have a bit of a similar thing with his wrist.
He's got one.
So I said to him, look, have a go with my machine. I don't know if you've got the same injury, but it is amazing. Anyway, he used it and it completely settled down his wrist. He then bought one and he's never had a problem with his wrist again.
Yeah.
So once you get an idea of what treatment works, then it's, you know, it's such a benefit because then you can just stay on top of it.
So challenge tour first year didn't go so well?
No, so I then, my mum prolapsed a disc in her back.
Right.
So I ended up taking...
Because she was caddying a little bit for you.
She was, yeah. She was coming out to events and various things. And her back completely went. She couldn't even walk. So she was basically bed bound and sofa bound. So I wasn't playing particularly well. I'd been struggling with injuries. So I took, you know, maybe 6-8 weeks off playing. And I was just practicing every day, taking her up to the golf club. You know, I remember her lying on the back seats of my car to try and take her out for a cup of tea, just to get her out of the house. And then I went to tour school and went through all three stages.
And got your card?
Got my tour card, yeah.
Straight onto the European tour at the time?
Yeah, 16th I finished at final stage, yeah.
And what category does that give you? What does that mean? Like,
So you're not going to be getting into the bigger events in Wentworth. So you're going to get into the South African swing around Christmas time and into the new year. And then, you know, the smaller events at that time. And you had a category on the Challenge Tour as well. So you could fill up the rest of the season with Challenge Tour starts.
And you bounced about on the European Tour for a little while, didn't you? So you were on there for how many years?
So I was on there fully for that year and then lost my card and was back on Challenge Tour.
Okay.
And then I did quite well at tour school, missed my card by a couple in 2012. So then I played, I think, five events that year in 13, made all five cuts that year.
Yeah. DP or European Tour, what, how did the year go? First year, certainly on tour. How was then the travel? You know, you've had the experience now of a little bit of travel and the other, like a satellite tour and now Challenge Tour and then now going on to the European Tour. How was it?
So do you remember the groove change?
Yeah, I do remember the groove
change. So that was the first year that kicked it.
Okay.
And I was taking advice from a management company. You know, I was fairly young, so they were like, right, the best deal for you is to sign a ball and wedge contract with Clevedon and Strixon to use their product, and they would pay you $40,000 for the year.
Right.
So I did. But the change of wedges, the change of ball and the change of grooves, my wedge game was
gone.
Terrible.
Yeah.
So I can't blame it on that, you know, whether it was technical stuff, but it was a lot of change and I didn't cope with that very well. You know, it helped fund my season. So maybe without that, I maybe wouldn't have been able to play, but you know, I don't know. Had I stuck with the same equipment, I also changed coach at that time.
Moved away from Dom?
Yeah. So I was working with, I met Dave Marsh, who used to play for Devon.
Yeah,
he was doing like a lot of mental stuff. And he basically said, you know, your swing's not good enough to compete on tour.
Good enough to get you there, but not enough to compete.
Yeah, and again, you know, I was maybe a bit naive at the time and made some mistakes in that. You know, I never really dealt with seeing a new coach. I never really had that chat with Dominic to say, look, I'm going to go and see somebody else. I felt really bad because, you know, Dominic had taken me to the European Tour, basically.
From a kid.
And then I'm taking advice off someone who's saying, you know, you don't swing it well enough to compete on tour. So, you know, I need to take ownership of that. And I made some mistakes, which, you know, still haunt me a little bit in terms of I never had that proper conversation with with Dominic.
But a management company, a good management company, a good manager would help that, would be a bit more advisory?
Yeah, I guess I never had those discussions with them. Yeah. You know, I was taking advice off an individual, I guess, which, you know, some of the stuff that he did helped me get through tour school. But, you know, he had an idea of my game, whereas I was quite young and naive and took advice off pretty much anyone back then. Certainly things would be a lot different now, being a bit wiser. But, you know, basically what people used to say back then, I used to take as gospel, and I believed I didn't swing it well enough, and then went to see Rob Watts.
Yeah. And I remember coming to watch you play at Celtic Manor one year.
Welsh Open, yeah.
Was it the Welsh Open? And you were playing with Darren Clark?
Yeah.
Was it just the two of you playing?
Just the two of us.
Did he talk to you?
No.
Did he not say
he was horrible to play with?
Was he?
Yeah. We saw the same coach at the time, Rob Watts. And
wow.
I remember saying, oh, so you see Rob Watts? Yeah. And yeah, you know, it's not his obligation to talk to me, but it was my first year on tour, you know. But yeah, didn't talk to my way around. We were a two ball. And
I remember, two ball.
Yeah, I remember my caddy actually saying quite a funny comment on the 13th, but that didn't go down very well at all.
No. To be fair, there's many things that I've heard over the years with certainly your golf travel and things like that, of experiences with Clarkey, and if he's not feeling it for that day, you're not getting anything out of him.
No, and I remember stopping after the 18th, and there was loads of little kids there, and I was giving away balls and signing gloves, and they didn't have a clue who I was.
No.
You know, just a random rookie on tour, but you know, giving away as much stuff as they could, signing autographs, and he just walked straight by.
Past.
Didn't even entertain doing anything. And you know, for somebody of his stature, it must, you know, his time must be getting pulled here, there and everywhere.
Yeah.
But it doesn't take much to smile at some little kids or chuck them a couple of balls.
Yeah. And you get to play with some very good players on the tour.
Yeah, I played a practice round with Retief Goosen, Soren Kjeldsen. He was again amazingly impressive, just from a 110 yards in point of view, just how good he was at getting that ball pin high and close. And you know, it wasn't particularly impressive from a long game standpoint, but it just shows you that golf is so many different elements that lead up to your final score.
Yeah. What would you say would be the highlight of your experience of being on tour? What have you enjoyed probably the most about being on tour?
Just how you're kind of looked after, really. Yeah, in terms of being picked up with a car and just little things like that, and all the facilities. You know, the facilities are so good in terms of your short game area, your range, your putting, the food and everything. You know, people say, oh, it's expensive to play European Tour. It is, but everything is, you know, geared up. It's actually cheaper to play on the European Tour than it is the Challenge Tour.
Yeah. I think what I admire most with you, James, is your resilience over the years. Like, I've watched your whole journey, and it hasn't stopped. It's still going.
Yeah.
And that's what I think is probably what I find most impressive, is that, you know, you've got to the top in the fact that you've got your tour card. You've been there and you've done it, you've experienced it, and you've had a flavour of it, and it's not, you've taken your knocks along the way, whether it's injuries, whether it's not retaining cards or whatever it is, but you've followed. It's like a game of, I feel like it's in my career as well, like it's a game of snakes and ladders. You know, you go up one ladder and then you fall back down and you're back to square one again, and then you climb up again and you feel like you're there, and then it just falls off again, and then you come back again. And it's those that keep going and keep grinding and keep finding another avenue to get there, whether it's you going off and doing your PGA to then, you know, because a lot of players don't, do they?
No.
They finish their golf and then they're like, oh, well, I'm done.
Yeah.
But you've gone and done your PGA, and then you've followed now the coaching element of what you enjoy doing, which helps pay the bills to then be able to keep going with your playing and keep progressing and playing in PGA events that you play in now, and you win, and it builds confidence, and then it gives you... I just admire that with what you've achieved over your time in the game. And it doesn't stop, does it? Because,
no.
You know, you've just recently been and played again PGA Cup. PGA Cup is a massive thing. Your experience in that?
Yeah, it was amazing. Learned a lot, sorry. You know, just how good they were at putting.
Because you got thumped.
Yeah, we got absolutely
PGA in hammered. In GB and I... took on America in America.
Yeah.
And got a bit of a hiding.
Yeah, we did.
How did it go the year, 2 years before? Because you played at Fox Hills 2 years
Yeah,
before,
I think we lost 15 and a half, 11 and a half.
Okay.
So it was tight. We got beat, but they were ahead the whole week.
Okay.
But in terms of preparation, Tim Rouse and Graham Walker, they were fantastic. Yeah. They didn't leave any stone unturned. You know, I've seen a few things on Facebook people have posted, which I don't agree with.
No need. There's no need for those comments.
No,
as well,
and they weren't there. Like, Graham is one of the best coaches in the world. Yeah. He was invaluable for the week. You know, he gave so much good advice. Anything we wanted in terms of coaching, or whether we could access him throughout the week, you know, he was amazing with his time. And, you know, Tim spoke to so many different people. We had messages off, you know, tour players, Tommy Fleetwood, we had a video from, loads of stuff. You know, we had practice sessions, and, you know, he really thought about his pairings, and we just got outplayed. You know, I've never putted on greens probably as quick as that, 13 on the stimp, which probably played a factor. But yeah, we just got outplayed, in my opinion.
What was the score this time?
17-8
Yeah,
17.5, 8.5, something like that.
Yeah. Well, you battle back.
Yeah, but for me, you know, I don't feel like I've had my best season in terms of the way I've played. The results have been really good, in terms of a second in the club pros and, you know, some good results. But yeah, it kind of, it's given me more motivation to improve. I've just started seeing a new putting coach, and, you know, I'm on an endless pursuit to see how good I can get. And I really feel like I can make some big improvements this winter, to make year my best year yet.
Tour school?
I was due to go to tour school. Yeah, I got back from America and I've been feeling awful.
Yeah.
So that combined with a driving license that ran out concurred for me for pulling out of tour school.
So you pulled out. So you were going to go out to Denmark?
Yeah, I was going to go out to Denmark. And okay. The weather has been terrible out there this week. It looks like it might get reduced to 2 rounds.
Really?
Which is, again, it's maybe a bit of a blessing. But yeah, just felt awful. Yeah, coming back for 5-6 days off the plane. Yeah. And I still don't feel amazing now. And this would have been, what, the fourth round today.
Okay.
So, you know, it's a tough one. You know, that's the first time I've ever sort of withdrawn from something like that. But I think it was the right decision.
Yeah. But you will carry on.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm more determined than ever to get back on the DP World next year.
Yeah.
Seeing John Parry, what he's done this year in terms of, you know, his 3 wins on Challenge Tour. We're a similar age.
He's already got his card.
Yeah. Yeah. We're a similar age. And, you know, there's not many people that I was growing up with that are still improving or trying to improve. You know, I was speaking to your brother about this a few weeks ago. You know, we're quite similar in terms of we are relentlessly trying to improve.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's no boredom with it. There's no kind of tiredness with the game, should we say. Yeah, and I've had a good long look at, you know, myself this year. I don't feel like I've played how I wanted to. So, yeah, I've made a plan for the winter of how I'm going to improve.
Give me 3 things that people don't know about you.
3 things. So I play a lot of pool.
Do you?
A lot of competitive pool. I've played money games. Yeah, grew up playing a lot of snooker at Tavistock,
yeah,
and
yeah,
that's
yeah,
led
yeah,
in.
Yeah.
So yeah, I play for like a Premier League pool team in Plymouth. I'm a mad Liverpool fan.
What? How?
My mum, basically.
She was a Liverpool fan,
so I supported them since the age of 4. My dad's an Everton fan, so
oh,
that keeps the rivalry going in the family. So
how are they both Liverpool? Have they got family at Liverpool?
No. So my mum started supporting Liverpool when she was,
maybe, she's that age when they were really good, weren't they?
Sort of the 60s, 70s, yeah.
I'm not saying they're good, not good now, but they were very good then, weren't they?
And then third one, massive animal lover.
Oh, because you've got a dog.
Yeah, got a dog, but I'll talk to anyone's dog. So if somebody's at the golf club with a dog, I will go and talk to it. So
one last thing I want to ask you. If there's one piece of advice that you would give to an up-and-coming golfer, so somebody that, take yourself back to when you were 17, 16, anything you could give that, whether it's a parent or whether it's somebody coming up through the ranks, what would you say to them?
What would I say to them? So probably the best quote I've ever had or heard was from Tony Robbins. And Carl Morris actually said this on one of his podcasts.
Okay.
He said, the quality of your life is determined by the quality of your questions. So before you do anything, whether it be a swing change, a coach change, a tournament, just either ask yourself questions, am I doing the right thing? Why am I changing? Or speak to a highly classed professional, whether it be your coach, but ask questions. What am I doing? Why am I doing it?
Don't be afraid to ask questions.
Don't be afraid to ask questions. What am I practicing today? Have I got better today? How's tomorrow going to look? Always ask yourself those questions and try and improve that way. If you can ask yourself better questions, I think you will get better.
Well, Jimbo, it's taken us a while to get to this point of getting this podcast done. I'm glad we've done it today. Great opportunity to pick your brain about how your journey's gone to this point. And also, it's great to see that you're not giving up on it and you're still moving forward. And yeah, I just thank you for your time. And thank you also for coming onto the channel and the amount of time that you do. It's fantastic, mate.
Yeah, no, thanks, Dan.
Thanks, mate.